Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. Hey, everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris. This is the podcast where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income and then ultimately legacy wealth. Many of you have downloaded over the years my freedom cheat sheet, which you can download at morrisinvest.com/freedom. And it really talks about building financial freedom through real estate, how many properties it would take for you to achieve financial freedom. And our guest today on the podcast shares a very similar philosophy on financial freedom and financial independence. His name is Fernando Ayres. He's helped others reach their financial independence day. He's achieved his own financial independence through real estate income investing after retiring from corporate America, designing computer chips in the tech industry for over 25 years. So as a fan of technology, I'm thrilled to have Fernando on the show. Fernando, welcome.
Well, thanks, Clayton. Nice to be talking to you today.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. And of course, you are co-founder along with the very famous Jason Hartman. Many of our audience probably knows Jason as well, Jason Hartman, and you co-founded realestatetools.com, which is really a great resource for people to kind of figure out rental income, all of those pieces of the real estate puzzle as they're getting started, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We're very excited to be here to talk about the software tools. As you mentioned, Jason and I started the company realestatetools.com, which has a suite of tools both for the mobile devices, Apple mobile devices, and also online to help investors track, evaluate properties, create Schedule E's for tax purposes, and really give them a more sophisticated way to, once they buy the property, especially to track the expenses and depreciation and all that, which is so important.
That's great. And that's such a great tool. I don't think people understand, or certainly it's not easy to calculate that using a spreadsheet. I mean, you can try to lay it all out, but to have an online tool like that to be able to figure out depreciation is killer.
Yeah, that's the typical problem that our software tools aim to solve is people, especially investors that are just starting out in rental income, they buy a property and they are excited, they get their first rents and they now realize that they need to keep track of this so that when tax time comes, they will have proper accounting. And you're right. Most people start out with a spreadsheet or they go online and or have a friend that gives them a starting point. And I certainly have done the reverse engineering and try to, create something on my own. But, there's a lot of issues with that. There's mistakes. There's misconceptions. The formulas might be slightly different, the amortization tables between what the bank has and what, it's actually having, happening in your property might be different. People have to keep track of their improvements versus repairs. And as you know, Clayton, it makes a big difference in your expenses for the property. If you don't classify these properly and you get audited, you'll be hit with a big penalty. So you have to keep track of this properly. And the software, just does it all for you. It's a sophisticated way to allow investors to keep track of it. And obviously on the front end, both with our apps and with the online tool, propertytracker.com, they can evaluate properties. And if they're looking to purchase properties in different markets, it's a way to standardize the data. And that's something that as an investor, I've had to learn the hard way. You go to different sellers or providers of properties that you want to invest on. And they all have their own tool or software to display properties and the location of their, cap rate information, cash on cash return, assumptions. It's all different. It's right. Hard to get your head around that. So if you can standardize that data within a tool that you control, you can normalize these properties and really make an apples to apples comparison that allows you to choose the correct one or the best one for your portfolio.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Let's back up a little bit. Obviously, you're at a high level now in real estate investing, but you weren't always that way. And you were in corporate America for a long time designing computer chips. Take me back to that time. Were you investing in real estate at the time, or did you get the bug and decide that you needed to make a shift?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, as it's probably true with most people, you always know someone in your family or friends that have become wealthy with real estate. You know, a lot of them have, you know, small rental properties, or they somehow rent some commercial property, and you know, all of a sudden you hear that they are doing really well and they have all of this money that they can invest in other things. And it's always been in the back of my mind that real estate is really the true way to create wealth, as opposed to having money in the stock market, which, you know, conversely, I've never met anyone that has become wealthy investing in mutual funds. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
It's a fallacy. The real returns is really with steady, long-term cash flow, along with all of the multi aspects of real estate income property investing. So I started my career, as you mentioned, in technology. I've been designing computer chips for 25 years. That's been my passion since childhood. And I've tried startups. I made some money in startups. It quite wasn't enough for me to become financially independent. And after the recession happened in 2008, 2009, a light bulb went off, and it really made clear that if I really wanted to make it so that I become financially independent, and I coined the phrase Financial Independence Day, you know, I wanted to have a day where I become financially independent. If I were to do that, if I really wanted to achieve that, I had to put money in a serious way into income property. And, you know, we've mentioned Jason Hartman. He became an inspiration for me. I've listened to a lot of his podcasts, which gave me the starting point of making a plan for buying enough properties so that I could replace my corporate income. At the time, my last corporate employer was Apple. I've worked for Apple for 10 years designing computer chips for all of their mobile products. And again, I made good money there. I had stocks. But again, it just wasn't enough for me to become financially independent. So I made this plan to purchase enough properties over a couple of years so that I would replace my corporate income. And I was able to do it in May of 2014. I reached that point. And Clayton, you probably know that one of the most interesting aspects of income property is the fact that due to depreciation, which is just this awesome deduction that you get, and you don't need to put money out to get this deduction. You simply, you know, get calculated as an expense,
right,
in your Schedule E. What that allows the investor to do is, if they need X amount, if they make, let's say, $200,000 in corporate America, in reality, with all the taxes, local, state, federal, they only keep about half of that, you know, if they have high income. So in real estate, due to depreciation, very little taxes are actually paid if you buy the right properties in the right locations with the right financing, which means that you only need about half of that income, that corporate income, which in this case would be $100,000, in order to be at the break-even point. In other words, your cash in your pocket from rental properties needs to be about half of your corporate income, which is just an awesome comparison. And I've been able to track the investment since I became financially independent. I started the process in 2012, again, retired from Apple in 2014. I've been tracking my returns ever since. And it's beautiful the way that the tax rate and the absolute amount of taxes that I have been paying has been dramatically reduced over the years due to real estate. But yet my standard of living is, from a cash flow perspective, is the same. And from an appreciation perspective, due to the residential properties that are purchased, has been growing every year. It's just a beautiful thing. It was definitely the right approach for me. I even compared the annual returns that Apple provided me over the years with my real estate income, taking into account the appreciation, the mortgage pay down, cash flow, all the tax benefits, and it outpaces Apple by a nice amount. It's just unbelievable.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Did you begin to understand depreciation right away? Or was this something, you know, a lot of investors get started and they're worried about the cash flow. I sort of follow the Gary Keller model of real estate investing, you know, buy, own, and then cash flow. Most people are so concerned with the cash flow right away, mm-hmm. but they forget they're building net assets by just acquisition. And then, of course, the depreciation cash flow can come in a few years if you have leverage on the properties. Where do you come down on that philosophy? What's your real estate investing philosophy?
I am a bit different on that. I follow the advice of buying a property. The property has to make sense the day you buy it. So my criteria really has to be that the property has to cash flow from day one. And the cash flow in this case is not much. You know, for a typical property of 120,000 with, you know, 85% loan to value, you know, something that is reasonable, would net about $250-$300 cash flow a month, given, you know, all the assumptions that I put in for a month vacancy and, you know, property management, so on and so forth. So I don't expect a lot from each property. I just buy a lot of properties with plenty of financing and then just use the law of big numbers in order to get enough cash flow for me to live on. So when I look back, I designed this portfolio with a bit of a mixture of some properties that I put more money down and some I leverage as much as I could, with the net effect of having enough cash flow for me to live on, but also buying some strategic properties in Class A type neighborhoods that would have a higher chance of appreciation in some select areas in order for me to build that equity on the property, which then would allow me to either do an equity stripping, take money out and refinance them, or sell them and do a 1031 exchange. You know, that sort of a mentality of owning these properties for as long as I can. I don't count on appreciation. I have it as a mix right. in my portfolio, if that makes sense.
Sure. I like to say that, you know, appreciation is icing on the cake. And I think as an investment vehicle, it's probably, I don't want to say it's dead as an investment vehicle, maybe kind of died in 2008, but we still see appreciation. But for that to be your main focus, I'm only investing for appreciation, that's probably not, it's probably going to get you into trouble.
Yeah, it's speculation. Let's really call it what it is. If you're buying a property, especially in states that don't make sense for rentals, and California is a perfect example, or you know, the Northeast is a perfect example, that the rent-to-value ratios are so low.
Right.
You know, you pay so much for a property, and you get so little yield out of it, it simply doesn't make sense. So if people are buying there hoping that the market is going to go up, it's speculation. You know what? You know, first time investors don't realize, and it's so true. When you lose, when the market goes down by, let's say, 20%, you actually have to have it go up by 40%, double that amount, for you to break even where you were when you started out.
That's such a great point. I think most of our, I've done videos on this exact topic on the 401k. People will say, hey, but my 401k bounced back. Yeah, but it took a decade for it to bounce back.
Exactly.
And then you wasted a decade of growth on top exactly. of that. And I think most people forget that. So Fernando, that's a really, really important point.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is very important to realize what's going on there. You know, speculation is good for spin, but for real long-term wealth creation, which I'm a perfect example of, there's nothing that beats rental property, rental income.
When you look at Independence Day, Financial Independence Day, I mean, I know what I call my freedom number. And, you know, like I said, so many of our audience have downloaded it, and it's just like a 3-page PDF that kind of helps people understand how to, you know, achieve financial freedom through the properties that we end up doing. But I know that for me, it's like covering your monthly expenses, right? Once your monthly expenses for an average of 6 months are sort of covered, then, and padding that by 10% for travel and those sorts of things, so that you're covering school, meals, entertainment, tax, all of those things, right? Where you could literally not work another day in your life, but you have that security, that financial freedom. What does Financial Independence Day mean for you and the people that you've taught?
Well, it's very similar to what you describe. In a spreadsheet, I actually, when I coach clients and I teach people how to achieve their financial independence, I use the same principles. I look, as I mentioned earlier, I look at the net income that most people have from their corporate job, you know, assuming the investor is a corporate employee, and look at what their net income is. And then I make an assumption on the properties that they're buying using that formula that I mentioned earlier for a typical, you know, $120,000 property. I look at how much that cash flows, and then I multiply by the number of properties that I need in order to hit the same net income that I have for my corporate job. And assuming that the money that you make from your corporate job, which was true in my case, is enough for you to live on and travel and do whatever you want to do, then you are sure that you're no worse, that you will hit that point. The key then becomes, where are you going to get the funds to put for down payment in these properties? Because I'm a big fan of financing, you know, long-term fixed rate financing. Leverage works beautifully in real estate. It's definitely the best use of leverage in any type of investment that exists. And if you put the right investment in place and you get that cash flow, just do the math and see how much money you need over time. And that's really the key in order to know how long it will take for your financial independence day. And depending on how many funds you had, I was fortunate enough, being in corporate America, working for Apple, during an phenomenal explosion in growth for the company, that I had a good starting point with my stocks, augmented with selling all of the mutual funds that took a big hit during the recession. I was able to start with my portfolio. And certainly, I have grown that portfolio due to the real estate appreciation and the doing 1031 exchanges and so on. But as you mentioned, it's the icing on the cake. I didn't count on that. I didn't need to count on it. And that just allows me to either grow my portfolio or expand into other areas, such as realestatetools.com, which is a company that we invested money on, which is all related to real estate investing.
That's great. How do you acquire your properties? Do you have a sort of a network of realtors you work with? Are you doing off-market properties, buying foreclosures? How do you end up acquiring your properties? And what markets do you like to go after?
Well, as I mentioned to you, I am a partner with Jason Hartman. Jason has a network of providers that across the country that we work with, and I visit different markets. I acquired most of my properties from his network. I've made relationships with different providers and invested in different ways with these providers. But he was the focal point of the investment.
Great. Going forward, how do you see the market shifting? Obviously, we're in a kind of an interesting time. We're post-presidency. We saw a bit of a rally, and then we saw a number of downturns in the market and all eyes sort of on what's happening in the tax reform in the United States, and how, you know, are companies going to begin to invest in the United States. We're also seeing in the marketplace too a surge in urban rentals. You know, that is the city centers. There's a recent report, 50% of people who live in like the urban centers are now renters. That's a huge increase, which it's great for us. You know, it's great for us as rental owners. But how are you playing the long game?
Well, I think it's just phenomenal what's happening. There's, you know, pros and cons with everything. But as you mentioned, especially the millennial generation, the gentrification of those urban centers, the mentality has shifted from the ideal, you know, American dream of owning your home to rental. I'm a renter myself. Even though I own over, you know, 50 properties, 70 units, I rent because it makes sense where I rent. It's actually allowing me to take the money that otherwise would be put into the main residence into other properties. So I, you know, from a macro perspective, it's definitely a great time to invest in real estate for incoming property. Now the economic indicators, as you know, interest rates are creeping up. You know, we keep hearing that the Fed is looking at 3 to 4 upticks this year. So financing has become a bit more challenging for the non-agency, non-Freddie and Fannie conventional financing. The commercial lending for residential properties has become a little more challenging because the rates have gone up. So we're seeing some urgency now for people to get financing before the rates go up. Of course, over time that will adjust itself and the market will react to it. But, you know, it's also, again, pros and cons. It's counterweighted by some talk in the not so distant future of this the agencies relaxing their limits. As you know, Clayton, you right now you can buy up to 10 properties with conventional financing, and if you're married you can buy 20, assuming both spouses qualify. But they're looking at relaxing that to 25 per person. You know, that is a huge game changer. If that comes true, it's going to open up this amazing window for many, many investors that have reached that limit and have now, you know, been stuck with this higher rate scenario.
Right.
Overall, the rates are still, you know, incredibly low. If you, again, look at historical perspectives. So, you know, there is some urgency in buying along with some changes in the mentality of the agencies of looking at investors as another pool of money coming in. Overall, I am optimistic. I definitely, looking back and looking forward, I see that I made the right choice holding these properties for the long term, riding that depreciation schedule. 27 and a half years is just a beautiful way to create wealth. You probably have heard the saying that you shouldn't wait to buy real estate. You buy real estate and then you wait.
Right. Exactly.
And you can see it on a chart, and I have done that myself, that it works, and it really is powerful.
What do you say to those who are kind of kicking the tire right now? They're hemming and hawing back and forth, and they're spending a lot of time hanging out in internet forums, and they're just not taking action. So I like to say that, you know, people that hang out in internet forums, those are people that don't take action, and they like to feed off of other people's misery. And they're like, am I right or am I wrong?
You are absolutely right. I have an engineering background, and I have many of my colleagues that analyze the pro formas, the projections of a rental property to death, and they criticize every single, you know, decimal point of return, and, you know, what if this goes wrong, and they never do anything, and time just goes by, and they just keep, as you say, keep, you know, finding problems with people that have invested, you know, in the right. Meantime, you know, we're creating wealth, and it's just amazing. A personal story. When I first started, I was doing that myself, again, with an engineering background. I created this humongous spreadsheet. I was looking at properties at the time in Florida. You know, there was a ton of inventory in Lehigh Acres and in the southwest portion of Florida.
Lehigh Fort Acres. I know it well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the – that was, and I my fans have probably heard me talk about this on the show, but that was one of the areas that I ended up speculating and going through a foreclosure in that exact neighborhood in Lehigh Acres, Florida. So I know it well.
Okay. Well, so my story is kind of quick. I looked at it in 2011. I was – looking at properties there that were extremely cheap, you know, built in 2006, 2007 for 70, 80 grand,
right.
Renting for 900, you know, the rent to value ratio we like to see above 1%. And in this case, they would certainly be above 1%. And I built this humongous spreadsheet, put all of these properties and analyzed them to death, compared one to the other, and, you know, worried about a percent here, a percent there. And I didn't buy it. At that time, for that region, I didn't buy any of them. I ended up, you know, doing something else. But here's the learning. I spent 6 months on that spreadsheet. And the truth of the matter is, at that time, had I bought all of them, I would have made a killing.
Oh.
I looked at the prices of these properties since that 2011 period to today, and the rents have both increased extremely, an extreme amount. It was just insane. And again, had I just made the decision to buy and not overanalyzed, I would be much better off.
Right.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, people like to sit back and they wait. They want to see something be 100% before they actually take action, or they want to exhaust all possible reasons for them not to take action. And you know, if you want to look for negativity out there, you're going to find it. I mean, you're always going to find it.
Yeah, in real estate, you know, when you're buying stocks and mutual funds, what people don't realize is that the risk is there. You don't see the screw ups from the management. You don't see how much money they wasted here and there. You just look at a return, you know, from Apple or any other company. And, you know, you don't really go into details to know what really happened there. And chances are there's a lot of money being wasted. In real estate, income property, especially, you see all of those bumps in the road. You feel them. You know, you are much more active. It's not a passive investment by any means, but you can mitigate some of these issues by having a proper property manager in place, buying properties where it makes sense, and you know, doing your homework. But at the end of the day, you have control, and that's really the key. You can make changes with that investment, and you can redirect, and you can react, and you can refinance, and you can sell. And you know, it's a much more powerful way to build wealth.
Fernando, where can people connect with you?
Well, the best way is through our realestatetools.com website. We do have the tools that I mentioned before. Propertytracker.com is another website. That's our main tool. We're actually revamping that tool. We're doing a visual update to the tool that will provide a better user experience. And that's the tool that allows to evaluate properties, track income and expenses, produce the Schedule E tax forms, and so on. People can also go to the App Store and they can look up Property Evaluator and Property Fixer. These are the two apps that we provide for free. There's a buy-in purchase that you can make within these apps in order to upgrade and give you more features. But they, as the name suggests, the Property Evaluator allows you to evaluate properties easily. And Property Fixer is more for flipping. We also have these tools on the Mac platform. So it's all Apple-based, no Android. And finally, the last resource is my personal website, which is fernandoarias.com. If people want to get in touch with me, they can go through that, and there's a way for the contact to be established.
Wonderful. Well, my guest today has been Fernando Ayres. It's been a real treat having you here on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation. I always like talking to like-minded investors who have a similar philosophy on wealth building. So, Fernando, my great pleasure having you here on the show, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Clayton. It's been my pleasure as well.
You can find show notes to everything that Fernando and I talked about today by just going to morrisinvest.com/podcast and clicking on the episode number. You'll see Fernando's podcast there, plus all of the information that Fernando mentioned. So if you're driving and you missed any of the links we talked about, we'll have it all there for you. We will be back once again with another episode on Monday of next week for more investing in real estate hoopla and knowledge. Now, in the meantime, folks, go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. Like Fernando said, don't sit back and wait, because that deal could go away and you'll be kicking yourself in the pants later. We'll see you next week, everyone.